A new era of agriculture begins for Yuma's farmers, and the future of Arizona Western College could be in the hands of sole presidential candidate Ritika Dewan. This is KAWC's Arizona Edition. I'm Alexandra Rangel. Yuma County unveiled a $1 million broadband tower project that will bring high-speed internet to local farms.
Not only does it allow our agriculture industry to use the latest and greatest technology, but it allows this to be the place that that latest and greatest technology is developed.
And Arizona Western College's public town halls for its next president drew lots of folks from its campuses and the community. We asked them for their impressions.
We're going to have to hold on to our seats because when she is going, it's going to be an amazing result and it's going to be great for our community.
These stories coming up on Arizona Edition.
Funding for Arizona Edition comes from listeners just like you. Your continued support allows us to bring you insightful conversations about issues and events impacting our community. Thanks to you, we are able to highlight the people and voices of Yuma and La Paz counties and encourage civil conversations around water, agriculture, healthcare, education, and much more. Please continue to tune in to Arizona Edition, and thank you for helping us keep our community informed.
This is KAWC's Arizona Edition. I'm Alexandra Rangel, Civic Engagement Reporter. It was a big week for farm tech in Yuma, where Arizona leaders joined the Yuma County Supervisors to dedicate a new fiber optic network built specifically for farmers. I spoke with a drone operator about the challenges of smart technology and the need for reliable internet on Yuma's farms.
So these are the controllers operating both drones. They pretty much fly themselves, but on here we can control what they're spraying, the amount, spacing, all the other stuff too.
Trevor Adams is a drone operator for JV Farms. This time of the year, he can often be found in the fields carrying large controllers used to pilot 200-pound, 9-foot-wide drones that spray fertilizer on crops. But there's one big challenge.
So a better signal would be a big thing, because a lot of times we're out in the fields that don't have signals and we need to relocate to be able to connect and be able to, for the drones to fly. So we'll be using them on a daily basis.
That lack of connectivity is a problem Yuma County leaders have been focused on solving for years. And on Wednesday, that work reached a milestone with the unveiling of Yuma County's first AgTech wireless tower, marking a new era for Arizona agriculture, bringing high-speed internet directly to local farms.
Arizona's agriculture industry has been ingrained in who we are as a state and as a people.
Governor Katie Hobbs attended the tower dedication ceremony, where Yuma County supervisors recognized her role in helping secure $6 million in state funding for the Ag Tower project. Once it's fully operational, it will include 34 wireless towers that will be built across 160,000 acres of farmland in Yuma County.
The fields that once depended solely on sweat and sunlight are now guided by sensors and satellites.
The fiber optic network will allow farmers to connect their smart technology, everything from drones to soil sensors and self-driving machines and tractors. To support the further growth of ag tech in Arizona,
but I was really proud to sign these bills.
Governor Hobbs signed two agricultural bills into law, Senate Bill 1320 and Senate Bill 1661. The legislation supports the use of autonomous farm vehicles and establishes a broadband service district authority to oversee the ag network. As the first project of its kind, Hobbs says it represents a major step forward for the region.
Our investments in broadband, not just this project, but across the state with the BEAD program and other investments, our work on Colorado River water especially is critical. And it is about the livelihoods of people in this community, but it's also about feeding North America, especially during the winter months when Yuma is the salad bowl of North America. It's so critical. And the governor's office, we're focused on partnering. We're focused on how we can continue to bring economic development. This is the place now where people are going to want to come and study, like the operation of autonomous farm equipment and how to do that. So the kind of economic development that will be spurred from that is really goes beyond agriculture.
Yuma, known as the Winter Salad Bowl, generates over $3 billion in revenue for the state each year, highlighting the vital role Yuma agriculture plays in the state's economy.
It's about ensuring that American agriculture remains strong, innovative, and resilient. Through this mesh network, Yuma farmers will have real-time access to information that will transform their operations. We will see autonomous implements, precision irrigation, real-time water monitoring, and countless innovations yet to be imagined.
Yuma County Supervisor Jonathan Lines says the project had long been in the goal for Yuma's growers, but it wasn't until the COVID-19 pandemic that the need for better connectivity became more clear, not just on the farm, but in people's homes.
There was a challenge with connectivity, and I received a call from one of my good friends that I had gone to grade school with and high school with, Jose Caceres, over at 4th Avenue Junior High School, and he said, Jonathan, he says, I have to send kids home during COVID, and they have no connectivity. They're severely disadvantaged. And it kind of set the stage for the next call that I received.
About a year later, the American Rescue Plan Act was signed into law in response to the pandemic. This brought $40 million in ARPA funds to Yuma County, paving the way for major broadband infrastructure projects.
Yuma County received ARPA funds. We designated 50% of those funds to build a fiber backbone for this community, for every community, from the East County down to the border. And I'm incredibly grateful for the supervisors for seeing that and collaborating. It was a 5-0 decision to spend that money and to build that backbone for Yuma County. That's going to bless future generations.
That's when the county partnered with Allo Fiber to build the Middle Mile Project, 140 miles of fiber optic network.
What makes it especially meaningful is that this new system is built upon that backbone that the county provided. Over the past few years, we've dedicated millions of dollars from the county to this network, and it's laid the foundation for what we're celebrating here today. It's a demonstration of a long-term vision. We didn't just plan for a faster internet. We planned for a smarter future. Mark and I had several conversations talking about the canal system. Somebody had a vision 100-plus years ago and started on this canal system. And we build upon that today, and we provide agriculture, we provide the leafy greens, wheat, any number of the other varieties that are grown here in Yuma to the rest of the nation. And it's because somebody had a vision, and I'm grateful for my supervisors and those who were involved in this project for having that vision to be able to see forward. This network will bring cutting-edge connectivity directly to the fields, linking technology, data, and people in ways that will reshape how we grow our food. I want you to think about that. It will define the future of agriculture, not just in Yuma County, but across the nation and worldwide. The mayor and I, thank you, Mayor, for being here. We're in Taiwan recently, and as we discussed what we were implementing here in Yuma County, a lot of people had never considered high-tech farming and why that was so important. And we now have a contingency coming in January to take a tour of our community and learn more about it and to see how they can collaborate.
For drone operators like Trevor Adams, he tells me they're looking forward to using their high-tech machinery with less disruptions.
Of course, yeah, we have automated thinning machines, lasers, weeding machines, and drones as well. So a lot of new automated. So they're going to be using the same towers.
For how long have you guys been using these drones and incorporating them in everyday farming?
For about 4 years now. This is our fourth season starting.
What have you guys learned in those 4 years?
Definitely a lot, for sure. They have proven themselves, very large learning curve with these drones because we're new to the industry. So as we figured their spacing, drift, whatnot, we've adapted to get as good as results as an airplane or a helicopter.
What was that learning curve like for you?
It was challenging, I would say. It took a while for us to figure out, you know, the area that we could use them and where we could really utilize their potential.
And so what types of things are these drones being used for?
So any kind of pesticides, so fertilizers, herbicides for weeds, and sometimes seeding.
And that potential is only expected to expand now that reliable internet is in place, especially as farmers invest in new technology. Adams says the smart technology they're using on the farm is already proving to save both time and money.
We are able to do pretty much what a tractor can do in about an hour and a half. We can do it in an hour, so it saves a little bit of time. The equipment's a lot cheaper. The drones aren't nearly as much as some of the airplanes that you see flying, or helicopters, of course.
And while saving money matters, making the most of every drop of water is just as important, especially as Colorado River water continues to shrink. The deadline for the seven basin states to reach a new Colorado River agreement was November 11. On Wednesday, Governor Hobbs criticized the upper basin states, saying they refused to negotiate.
They tell our negotiators that it is too complicated and impossible for them to reduce water use. And I have a really hard time believing that. I have a hard time believing that it's impossible to conserve water when I stand before you and see some of the country's most sophisticated ag tech. The truth is that if they wanted to conserve, they would. We're going to keep fighting to protect our Colorado River water, because Arizona's water users have done the right thing for decades, just like Yuma has demonstrated here today. We shouldn't be punished for leading the way in conservation and cutting-edge practices.
The 34 AgTech towers are expected to be fully operational by the end of next year. For KAWC News, I'm Alexandra Rangel.
Coming up after the break, learn what Arizona Western College faculty and staff are thinking about the college-favored candidate for president. This is Arizona Edition on KAWC. I'm Cisco Stargazer.
Funding for Arizona Edition comes from listeners just like you. Your continued support allows us to bring you insightful conversations about issues and events impacting our community. Thanks to you, we are able to highlight the people and voices of Yuma and La Paz counties and encourage civil conversations around water, agriculture, healthcare, education, and much more. Please continue to tune in to Arizona Edition, and thank you for helping us keep our community informed.
Arizona Edition, I'm Cisco Stargazer, Education Solutions Reporter. On the first week of November, a series of public town halls were held for Arizona Western College's would-be president to present her vision for the college. Dr. Ritika Dewan is currently the sole preferred candidate to assume the position after Dr. Daniel Kaur retires at the end of the academic year. At the town halls, Dewan presented on her background, values, and intentions if chosen to be president. In last week's Arizona Edition, we shared what Dewan said, but we also wanted to learn what people thought walking away from the forums. For this week's show, we reached out to folks throughout the college. First up, Professor of English Dr. Eric Lee noted that there was a lot of interest from the Matador community.
First thing I'd say is that it was standing room only, which in a dozen years I've never seen happen at AWC, so I think Ritika drew in a large crowd of diverse employee groups, so...
Professor of Accounting Dr. Chris Duke was very excited by Dewan's presentation.
I was excited and so impressed with Dr. Dewan. She was amazing. She answered all the questions. She explained everything that she has done for our community and for the Entrepreneurial College. She discussed the grant funding that she has brought to the college, which really helps our programs. She's also talked about her community partnerships, especially with Onvita and the nursing program and the X-ray tech program. I was just so impressed how involved she is and how articulate she was with explaining what she's done here on campus over the last number of years, everything she's accomplished. It's amazing.
Professor of Multilingual Composition Dr. Sarah Amani really appreciated Dewan's emphasis on her background and how it guides her leadership.
I thought the town hall was encouraging in a lot of ways. What stood out to me and to some other faculty that I've spoken with was how she opened her presentation by sharing her pride in being an immigrant and a bilingual, former faculty member and now an administrator. That really resonated, especially for those of us in the South Yuma County, especially San Luis campus, where we serve a largely Hispanic and a multilingual student population. So it really felt personal and it felt relatable. And it showed that she understands the power of multilingualism and, you know, the representation of culture or multiculturalism in education.
Professor of Nursing Dr. Tracy McDonald highlighted her favorite parts.
My favorite part of the town hall was at the end when somebody asked her to define success for the college. And her definition of success was seeing our students walking across the line at graduation. Her noting that faculty feel involved, that the students feel involved, that the faculty and the students all feel valued. I think that was one of her biggest points that she pushed, and I can see her doing that.
Northern Arizona University librarian Amy Quinn really appreciated that DeJuan didn't gloss over challenges.
She also talked about some of her challenges, which I thought was really important. A lot of people like to skip over that part, but being challenges always come up, and they always come blindside you, and I think she's very aware of where she will struggle, and I thought that was good. My overall impression was very positive. I thought Ritika's presentation was, like all of her presentations, very professional, very personable. She did it in a very conversational style, which is how I prefer things. I prefer things to be open and as transparent as you can be in such an important position.
DeJuan's experience in the classroom was a common positive thread mentioned by the folks we interviewed.
Another thing that I think really stood out was her emphasis on empowering faculty in AWC and valuing their voices in decision making. Right now, some faculty, you know, across the college are feeling a bit disconnected and honestly checked out. And there are times this sense that maybe decision making has become more top down, and unfortunately, it's affected some morale and collaboration. So hearing Dr. DeJuan talk about engaging faculty and, you know, building trust and creating space for input in innovation and in planning felt really, really helpful. So it gave us the feeling that, you know, she understands how important that sense of belonging and shared purpose is.
After DeJuan's presentation and some prepared questions, attendees at each of the forums in Yuma, San Luis, and Parker had the chance to submit questions. Several folks expressed dissatisfaction, however, that their questions were filtered and sometimes paraphrased or simplified by moderators. When we asked Dr. Imani about moderation, she explained why it might have been disappointing for faculty.
You know, some important topics that we faculty were hoping to bring forward didn't even make it into the conversation, and some others that did make into conversation were edited down quite a bit. So that, we thought, limited the opportunity to fully gauge her views on some key issues. But, you know, still, within the scope of what was asked, she came across as someone open to dialogue and willing to listen. And that's really something many of us value and we hope will continue moving forward.
Dr. Lee, who is president of the Faculty Senate, did have a question answered at the town hall he attended. AWC's Chief Human Resources Officer Kathleen Ocampo acted as moderator for the town halls and presented his question.
Currently, adjunct rates are near the lowest in the state. What is your plan to address possible increasing gaps between faculty and administrative pay?
After Ocampo read the question, DeJuan replied she'd look into it.
Absolutely. I will work with faculty and work with, Brian Doak, EVP, you know, who we will evaluate where the rate is. I know there was an increase this year, but I will be, absolutely. I was the adjunct faculty. I know. Adjunct faculty was 815. It was lower than that, 750 at a time. I remember that. Like, you know, so supporting our adjunct faculty is critical. We need faculty, right? So we will reevaluate. We will look into that. We look in the data of the state and see where we are with that. So absolutely.
We asked Lee if he was satisfied with the response.
I'm going to take her at face value, and I have known her for a long time. So I'll trust her until proven otherwise, right? So we always have to give the benefit of doubt to people. I believe in giving the benefit of doubt to people and trusting that they'll do the right thing and hopefully you're not disappointed, right?
Professor of Accounting Dr. Chris Duke concurred.
I believe she answered that very satisfactorily, and it's going to be good news for the Faculty Senate. We were really happy to hear what she had to say.
Reflecting on the responses to all of the questions, Northern Arizona University librarian Amy Quinn offered one thing she would have liked to see more of.
There were some I wish she would have gone in more detail for myself, but they were adequate. As a presidential, the future president, I think she could have elaborated, especially related to some of the upcoming budget and curricular needs of the campus. But I suspect that will come in time. I know she's been in those conversations, and maybe because of the kind of room it was, she didn't feel comfortable answering in that particular setting. And I appreciate that. Having been in management before, you have to tailor your answers to specific audience needs, because some things just cannot be shared.
Overall, our interviewees were rather satisfied with Dewan's responses.
I think she answered them perfectly. She talked about her accomplishments. Then she talked about our wonderful school. I'm sorry, I love Arizona Western College, and I love what we do for the community. And she talked about that, all the programs that we have out there. And she talked about how we've grown and we've improved and we've made AWC better. And she talked about how she wants to continue that momentum and continue to bring wonderful programs to the community, get them involved, and provide a extensive education.
But more than that, folks appear to be hopeful and looking forward to a new chapter of Arizona Western College history. As Duke put it,
I'm so excited because she has represented Arizona Western College not only nationally, but also internationally. She's a very dynamic individual, and she's going to take us places, and we're going to have to hold on to our seats, because when she gets going, it's going to be an amazing result, and it's going to be great for our community.
Or perhaps more succinctly,
let's see Ritika go into the president's office.
To learn more about Dr. Ritika Dewan's vision for the college as the very possible next president, visit our site at kawc.org. Our education coverage can be found under Education Solutions on the News tab. For Arizona Edition, I'm Cisco Stargazer, and this reporting supported by a grant from the Arizona Local News Foundation.
Arizona Edition is a production of KAWC Colorado River Public Media. Questions or comments are welcome. Send them to az@kawc.org. You can also connect with KAWC on Blue Sky and Facebook. Our theme music was used with permission and composed by Stephen Hennig and performed by the members of the Yuma Jazz Company. More information at yumajazz.com. I'm Alexandra Rangel. This is KAWC's Arizona Edition. Thanks for listening.